It's the Hoops Show. I'm Thomas Frank Carr. I am not an expert at basketball, but we have an expert insider to discuss what happened yesterday during Penn State's loss to Wisconsin. We'll get into it. And despite what I just said, I got some opinions because I'm not without eyeballs. That's coming up on the Hoops Show. Nate, here we are again. Here we are again. Yeah. Penn State lost to Wisconsin, and I'm just going to go out and say it. Like, watching the first half of that game, Penn State was the more athletic team. They moved the ball. They shoot well. They were just – they looked better. And yet, they lose 63-60 to Wisconsin. They had some opportunities late, but we're going to get into the what happened, and we're going to get into the why it happened, but – Tyler Wall, a big storyline for you coming out of this game, right?
Yeah, for sure. Let's, you know, we've got some time to kill. I just want to make sure that we don't recap this game as black and white, right? Because I know that there is going to be a temptation to do that. And I think it's important to give it some context of saying, yes, there were things that we'll get to in terms of officiating that, you know, played a role in how the game unfolded, but there were other things as well. There was just a lot going on. There is a lot going on. This feels like an ongoing story of Penn State basketball, and so I felt like it was important to kind of set the table in that regard. And so Tyler Wall, right? Yeah. Wisconsin was a team going into this game on Tuesday night that had lost three games in a row and really had some struggles, right? It lost two games closely, and then it got blown out, really, against Indiana over the weekend. So, you know, so this was a hurting Wisconsin team based on the fact that it didn't have one of its better players. He came back. He was able to play on that ankle on Tuesday night. And honestly, I don't know what you thought, but he looked pretty good to me. Certainly, his scoring and production were good, but also I just thought he moved fine. I thought he ended up, you know, having a game that was fine in that regard. So 10 points, 5 rebounds for him. Like that's a pretty productive day. But it was one of a few storylines, right? You have him coming back. They didn't know, I think, coming into the game whether like he was a day to day kind of thing. It was announced on. Not announced, but reported on Tuesday morning that he had practiced but not done full contact work on Monday. And so, you know, surprise, surprise, guy who had missed three games was able to come back and play. On top of that, Penn State was going into a venue at the Kohl Center that Penn State has never won at. Never.
This stat. So when I learned of this a year or two ago, having watched Penn State basketball for a couple years now, I knew they always struggled there. I knew they hadn't won since I had been watching, but I didn't know it was never. That's up there with Penn State has never had a DB in the first round of the draft. Like that is an insane stat that feels like it shouldn't be real. And yet here we are because games like last night happen.
Yep. It's 0-18 going into last night's game. Obviously 0-19 now. And, you know, I think Micah Shrewsbury on Monday pretty much laid out the type of atmosphere that it is reliably for Wisconsin. And, you know, just it goes beyond just atmosphere, right? It is this whole cornucopia of things that are involved when you go on the road and play a team like Wisconsin at Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's a thing.
They both should be great challenges for us. I don't look at records. I don't look at what people have done. I don't look at how they're playing. Like, Wisconsin's a good team, right? Like, they're a good team. And it doesn't matter if they've lost three or four games in a row, it doesn't change who they are, right? They might not be playing great right now, but that's all it takes is one game to flip that for anybody in this conference. So, like, that's going to be a challenge for us.
They did flip it.
Yeah.
They did flip it. And yeah, it was not, I think that anybody that watched that game would probably share your sentiment in terms of, oh, how talented is Wisconsin against the talent that maybe Penn State has. But in terms of maintaining identity and inflicting their will, I don't think there was any question that Wisconsin was able to set the pace, set the tone, set all of those things really throughout the game, but particularly in the second half.
Yeah.
Which all kind of leads into the third setup, which is Micah Shrewsbury's anticipation, what he talked about on Monday, of like, you've got this arc, right, in the story of, after Purdue, he's really frustrated with officiating. He's frustrated with the way games are being called, and specific to how Penn State's able to operate offensively based on the fact that there's an imbalance, there's an inconsistency in not necessarily the obvious shooting fouls, but things that are happening on the floor.
Right.
And so you go from that to Indiana, where he really backed off and said, hey, I can't do this. I can't operate this way. It's not helping the team. I need to be more focused on, right? I mean, he called himself a dummy. He was like, I'm acting crazy. I don't want to do this. This isn't the type of coach that I want to be. And so that was where he was going into this Wisconsin game.
Yeah, we're going to go in a tough atmosphere. And like, it's going to be hard to win at Wisconsin. You know, but it's not impossible, right? Like, we can do it if we play the right way. But I need to keep my focus on that. Right? Our team needs to be focused. That we need to be poised and calm in the face of the storm, or in the eye of the storm. And, you know, I need to help them do that. So I need to be that myself. So knowing that going in, just trying to keep the focus on that, trying to keep the focus on, here's what we need to do to be at our best tomorrow night to come out there with a win. And that's it. And there's going to be stuff that happens in that game that, you know, I'm probably not going to like or agree with, but like, yeah, how can I help Pickett be better? How can I help Andrew Funk be better? Keba, you know, Evan, who've never gone into Madison, Wisconsin, and played in front of that, you know, sea of red up there. So
how would you say that, let's just start with this. How would you say that he did at that last part of helping his team be better, your observation of that, given that it was a very, there was a lot, as you mentioned, there's a lot going on yesterday. Yeah. So it might be a little bit muddy to get like a clear answer to that question.
Yeah. Well, let's just start with, the man is a soothsayer. I mean, how could anyone have predicted that, that Penn State would have some challenges and some things that happened in the game that wouldn't be to his liking? Right.
Like, right.
So he knew, he understands that that's kind of a thing that happens in an environment like that. And so that was the setup. And I thought overall, if you look at how the game was played, he didn't lose his mind. I mean, I think that there were some frustrations that he exhibited, you know, look, we're watching on TV, but yeah, I thought that he kept his composure throughout what would probably be, I just, it's hard not to come across as being like blinded by the one-sidedness, I think, of many of the calls, right? There wasn't a balance to it.
Can you give an example to that, the specifics, just for, you know, clarity?
Yeah. I mean, where do you start?
Like, it's block charge was a big story, I think, last night. Is that an area where you think it was fairly adjudicated?
Yeah, well, certainly the end of the last minute, right? The Jalen Pickett charge with 53 seconds to play is unusual, and we can save this part of the conversation for a little bit later, but it's atypical in a variety of ways. But that wasn't the only call. That wasn't the only thing that was happening. What was happening is Penn State got into foul trouble early. Cam Winter got into foul trouble. Seth Lundy got into foul trouble. And then got into more foul trouble on the backside, right at the start of the second half. Penn State had accumulated really four fouls before like the 5 minute mark in the second half. I mean, it just compounded very quickly. And when there were things happening on the other end of the floor that I think Penn State could very clearly make an argument and say, hey, this isn't being called the same way, right? The fouls on the floor for Penn State that Penn State was being called for were not the same things against a Wisconsin defense that, like, let me go straight to this quote. Greg Gard was not in any way cryptic about what was happening in terms of their intent coming out of the first half, right? Wisconsin was down 36-30, and they went into the locker room, and the conversation was, hey, you got to be more aggressive defensively. The Penn State is getting the shots that it wants from three-point, and Jalen Pickett was doing really what he wanted in the paint. Even though Jalen Pickett wasn't getting calls on those necessarily, Greg Gard sent the message, hey, literally, quote, we had no choice. We had to find a way to shut off the threes and still stop Pickett from getting to the rim. Our guys battled, but it wasn't pretty all the time. Battled is code for
grab.
Right. Like
poke, pull.
Slowed things down.
Slowed things. Yep.
All of those things.
Yeah. And it to what I was going to say a second ago of how Wisconsin was able to dictate things, the flow of the game was entirely different. Literally the ball movement, the ability, the clock kept stopping for fouls and this and that. And there was no flow to the game. And Penn State is a team that needs to have flow. And this is something I want to say, like I said, I'm not an expert to know all of the things you're talking about with some of the ins and outs of what's making the sausage, but I've watched enough basketball to know that was boring when there was 11 points in the first half of the second half, right? So like they scored 11 points over like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's no fun for anybody. No one enjoys watching bricks and turnovers and not, you know, no runouts. There was no flow to that game. And like, I looked up and even Jalen Pickett, I was like, it'd be amazing if anyone could score this half.
Yeah.
But no one could score.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, like there's a balance to be had between guarding and playing good defense. If there had been a bunch of open looks that just didn't go down, it would probably be a little bit of a different conversation, but it wasn't necessarily that. It was trips without shots, right? Like they didn't even get attempts at the basket. And I think that was something that Shrewsbury brought up again on Monday as being really critical to this game. And when you look at the final breakdown, Penn State had 10 turnovers, which isn't great, but probably just a couple off of what they typically do, right? They're looking to have 8, 7, something like that. That's a decent number for them. Wisconsin scored all the time. Wisconsin had 15 points off of turnovers to Penn State's none off of Wisconsin's 6 turnovers. So like Wisconsin did a really nice job of turning Penn State's mistakes or forcing Penn State mistakes and then turning those mistakes into points. But you're right. There was no consistency. I really felt like for either team, especially in the second half.
That's Wisconsin's game though, right? That's the exact same thing we were talking beforehand. It's like they are Michigan football is what you said. And I'm like, yeah, they're Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a void of interesting sports. It is a black hole of offense. So in the second half, like that's what they do. They're going to disrupt things. They're going to pull, they're going to tug, but they obviously, this is the downside of Penn State. If they can't play with flow, they don't have the size to consistently get buckets underneath. So if they can just drip, 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 they're going to win that game. The flow, the ability to get the ball and move it around the perimeter and get open shots didn't come till late in the game, right? And then I think at that point, Penn State was totally out of rhythm. Is that a fair assessment of kind of how you saw things? Or what did you see as far as how the flow of that game went?
I thought that things loosened a little bit. You're right. I mean, after kind of the 10-minute mark, things loosened to the point where it was just shot for shot. I mean, it was compelling. It was a 4-point game that would go to 1 point, then back to four and back to one and back to four and back to one. You saw some big shots hit. It started to find a little bit of a rhythm, but I mean, it was still so painfully stagnant, I guess. Yeah. I mean, there were just so few things that I think, look, I was not impressed by Wisconsin's offense. I thought that Wall played well, and I thought that Crowell played well, right? Yeah. Those two guys, I mean, Crowell just kind of went off in the second half in particular, but that was the type of flow, was back and forth and back and forth. And it set up really a final 3 minutes, 5 minutes that became extremely critical.
Is there, and this is the part of the psychology that I don't know that like is productive to get into, but is there like an officiating reset at halftime of, okay, they go in the locker room, they say, what did you see? What are we going to look for to start the second half? Because it does seem like the officials get more involved in the second half of some games. And is that a fair way to paint that?
I have to claim ignorance on that. Right. I'm not in that locker room. I don't know what they're talking about. I think is your perception one that aligns with mine, how I see games being called typically. Yeah. I think that that's fair. I think that it also plays into a little bit of, we're having this conversation about what happens to Penn State basketball on the backside of halftime. Right. And it's like, oh, well, where does it go? How do you explain this? How do you figure that a team that has a
looks
lead
so good
at
the in
half,
first half. Right? So many times this year, they've looked so good in the first half. And then it just is, it's like they're walking through a bog in the second half.
Because it is a bog. That's the point. Yeah. That's the point, is that the fog, the bog settles in, it swamps things up, and Penn State doesn't have an answer when it can't play the way that it is playing in the first half, right? We talked about this after that Indiana game. Tone is set. Tone is dictated by what officials call and what officials don't call. Certainly some teams don't foul to begin with, right? Or some teams do foul and are called for it. But if you're racking up personal fouls, which is something that happened to Penn State on Tuesday night, it changes you. It changes the way that you approach what you're doing. If you know that you can't do this without sending them to the line, without getting into the bonus really, really quickly, it impacts you. And so Wisconsin did not have to suffer through that process, right? There was no repercussion for Wisconsin playing that way. And instead, you just saw Penn State's lead evaporate very quickly, right? I mean, the 6-point lead was gone. And you know that, right? 6 points is not a ton of points in college basketball. But in a game where you score 60 and 63, 6 points is a ton of points. And so Wisconsin made quick work of getting rid of that lead. And then from there, again, it was just back and forth, back and forth. It was, I'm not going to say it wasn't entertaining, but, there were plays that were made probably for Penn State's liking, not enough of them.
Yeah. So the other thing I think is important here is, like, we're on a Penn State basketball podcast. I watch Penn State basketball and that's it. I don't know if you watch any other college basketball, but like it's not illegal, right? So I guess this is the point, is like, for a team to play physically and change the style, teams don't have to play the Penn State style. They don't have to come out and play with more flow. If they want to do this stuff, like, that's entirely their prerogative. Yeah. But it's like, which one of these, just like in any other sport, which one of these philosophies and competing ideas is going to be the dominant one? It just seems weird that in the second half, it's always the other teams. Like, from the observations of, it always seems like the flow, like the game style changes away from what Penn State is doing, and they're in control of a lot of things. I guess the other examination, we're looking at the officials. Greg Gard comes out and says, like, yeah, well, yeah, we were getting more physical. Is there anything from like a tactic standpoint that teams are doing that Penn State can counter to? You know, I think you just kind of said no, but like, is there something that Penn State can do to try and change things up and avoid these second half slumps?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think the thing that stands out to me is getting into these predicaments in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. If you look back at the first half, and look, nobody bats 1,000. You get that, right? Nobody's going to make every shot. Penn State had great opportunities in the first half that it missed on, okay? Yeah. Whether it was Seth Lundy off of he had a travel off of a turnover, right, for what should have been a very easy bucket in transition. Pickett, for as great as he played, and he really did have a nice night in a lot of instances, he had a bunch of great looks at the basket that didn't go down. Kebba Jai had another dunk that rimmed out, right? So yep. Instead of it being a 6-point game, let's change it to a 13-point game at the half or a 10-point game at the half. How does that impact things? How does that change the way that Wisconsin is doing things? Because Wisconsin really took a bunch of like mid-range jumpers in the first half. They did not have great shot selection.
Yeah.
Change that into, instead of being able, to go to the big guy, all of a sudden you have to exclusively shoot threes to try to kind of worm your way back into the game. I think that changes things. Like I said,
yeah.
So, I don't know that there's a whole lot that Penn State can do other than make more shots. And it's funny, Shrewsbury was asked in the post game about what differentiates, right? Like what's the characteristic that differentiates Wisconsin, who has won a bunch of games like this, close games this season, versus Penn State, who has now come out on the wrong side of it, you know, a handful of times here, even in the Big Ten. And I'm going to quote him here, so don't tune out. But he was like, the last shot goes in. I don't know what more else we could have done. We got stops down the stretch. I guess the thing, we shouldn't have fouled early in the second half, and got them in the bonus for so long. But they went for the longest time without a field goal down the stretch, so we guarded, and I thought we got good looks offensively. And then this is where we get to the meat. Probably the biggest thing that upsets me is those two charges were probably the biggest plays in the game. And editorializing here, he's placing the blame on his players, but he's also inviting a reexamination of those calls in the first place, right?
Right.
Because he's saying, okay, we play off 2 feet, we jump straight up, you're getting a layup or you're getting a kick out three. We don't, they take charges. Now they're going down on the other end. We get nothing out of those when those possessions were good stuff was happening for us.
Yeah.
Right. And so it just, Penn State had multiple opportunities to kind of vanquish this insurmountable hill, right? They're just continuing to climb back and climb back, shot at a time, and Wisconsin is maintaining it. But when Penn State has the opportunities to take a lead, these are the things that happened, right? Is you had these critical calls that kind of upended the shot. Like, you don't even get the shot because you've been called, for an offensive foul. So very clearly it was frustrating for them. Very clearly the fact that it was Jalen Pickett. Like, that's the second part of this, is one side is it's Penn State basketball. I've been covering this for 18 years. To call a bias in the Big Ten in officiating is something that Penn State fans have heard, have expected. Right. It works itself out like that certain teams, certain programs who have established themselves tend to get better calls. You tend to get better calls at home anyway. All of those things are true.
And those stars, this is another conversation, right? The star player on each team, whether it's NBA or in college, that guy usually gets the benefit of the doubt from the official, except in this situation, right? Even going back to before this game, Jalen Pickett not getting calls in the paint when he's backing guys down, right? So that's the next layer of being Jalen Pickett too.
Correct. correct is not only does the call, the charge call, go against Penn State, but it goes against Jalen Pickett. The guy who has the hands in his ball is the star on your team. He is one of the best players in college basketball this season. He's certainly one of the better players, if not right behind Zach Edey in the Big Ten in terms of dominance, willing a team, you know, kind of dictating how a team and a program operate. Like, he's right there. And so for a bang, bang call, time and place, less than a minute to play, like that just, I'm just like, I've polled some people, I've surveyed after the fact, right? Different perspectives, people who've been in the game, people who've been different places. It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Like, that is just in a very atypical call, but certainly Wisconsin got that call, you know, was able to turn around. And after Andrew Funk missed, right? Andrew Funk had a miss at 20 seconds for a three-pointer.
Open, very open.
Very open, great look. Cam Winter had two looks. Neither one of those went down. And then Wisconsin got fouled, made its two free throws. Penn State had one final look with 5 seconds to play. And Funk took, again, like another, it goes back to what Shrewsbury was saying about concentrating on what he can do to help the team. The plays, the chalk out of the timeouts were great. They were, they were great looks. They were good looks for what you could possibly expect for Penn State in those situations. They just didn't go down.
Yeah. I thought that last one, that was the one I was talking about where you got Funk open and Pickett has the ball. He's backing down. You are automatically assuming that's going to be, if I've got the plays right, that is going to be hit. The ball is in his hands. And suddenly you've got an open player at the 3-point line that has the opportunity. And you can't miss those. So that's the second part, I think, of this conversation is because of the final 3 minutes and how they played out and some of the officiating, how that plays in, Penn State still had the opportunity to win. Like, we talk about all the factors of what went against them, the adversity, they still had the opportunity to win and they didn't. How do you calibrate your expectations for this team the more information we get and the more times they're in these high leverage situations? And Michael Shrewsbury has talked about it. We had the whole conversation about tone and riding the ship before the win over Indiana. And here we are, big shots late in the game, don't go in.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about this particular team and your assessment of them as it continues?
I think that I'm glad for the setup. Like, this is a critical moment, right? This is the high wire part of the story where things can go either way, because look, they're 3-4 in the Big Ten. They've won 12 games. They have every opportunity to win 7 or 8 more games, right? And people who are listening to this who have followed along, we're ballparking 19 wins for Penn State to get to the tournament, right? Mm-hmm. 20, and I don't think it's really even a question, but 19 should probably get them in. How do you not allow the frustrations of feeling as though you're on the bad end of the whistle, feeling as though the big shots haven't gone down, feeling as though, like, everybody that they've played, Penn State has been competitive with. They can compete and play with anybody on the schedule. That's just the reality of the Big Ten this year. They are right in the thick of those things. But frustration is real. These guys aren't robots. They don't just forget things. They don't just forget things. Right. These are people that you're dealing with.
Can I ask you, I want to interrupt here 1 second, and this is a total derailment, but I had this conversation last night with my wife while watching the game. Have you ever seen in person Andrew Funk smile?
Ha. Yeah.
Cause I have not seen him smile on camera once. The one time I saw him smile, they had the graphic of him with the 3-point shooting on TV. And I was like, oh, okay. So he does, like, he is capable of smiling. He's just a very serious dude on the court. And I was just curious. Have you seen him smile in person?
I have. He wants to win.
Okay.
He wants to win badly. All these guys do. Jalen Pickett desperately wants to win. And frankly, these guys are winners. They've done winning in their career. Bucknell wasn't great last year, but they've had good seasons that he's been a part of. Cam Winter has won basketball games. Jalen Pickett has won basketball games. So, and Seth Lundy, right? Like Seth Lundy was part of the 2020 team for Penn State. I mean, these are not guys who are just going to be content with having good individual performances while the team loses. They want to win. And so it is this very challenging moment, I think, for Penn State to not allow what happened on Tuesday night to roll into the next game on the schedule, which is like just on a platter, Nebraska, right? Like
right.
For a Saturday home game.
Saturday home game.
Micah Shrewsbury has alluded to it. He hasn't been as vocal as he probably could be, but it's the only Big Ten home Saturday game. They have home Sunday games, but home Saturday game. This is a huge weekend for Penn State sports. There is a wrestling match at the Bryce Jordan Center on Friday night. There is hockey both nights. Like, people will be in town for these events this weekend. And my expectation, I've kind of heard some things. There's a little bit of an undertone. The curtains will be drawn. They've sold seats for the top level, right? Like the Bryce Jordan Center will be, if not packed, it'll be very full on Saturday for Nebraska. And so not only do you have that environment, which is a rarity at Penn State, but it's also against one of the less successful teams. I'm not going to call them a bad team because I don't think that they are. Nebraska has good pieces on that team. They just haven't won a lot of games. They've lost four in a row. They play Ohio State tonight. So this could be a Nebraska team with five losses in a row going into this game. We'll see, but like Penn State has to be able to handle its business. This is a game that Penn State should win, right? But you can't win the next game if you're still fixated on what happened in the last game and the last opportunities that you missed. Like you got to put it away. And so I think that is incumbent on Penn State's coaching staff and the leaders of the team to be able to handle their business in that way. Like today needs to be a day where they wipe it. Just wipe that loss clean. There will be other opportunities in away venues through the rest of the season. Go get them, So we'll see.
So what do you see with Nebraska? And before you say anything, I apologize. I did not see that you had another Micah Shrewsbury quote you wanted to pull here. So I don't have that one, but what do you see from Nebraska that you want to highlight?
Just no one really individually, just good individual pieces that don't always play well as a team. They've had some close losses. They took Purdue to overtime, which is something. I mean, we've seen how good Purdue is, but also they needed overtime to beat Minnesota, which is not one of the better teams in the Big Ten this year. So the only game that they've won this season in the Big Ten is Iowa. They had a fairly tough non-conference schedule. So the fact that Nebraska is, 9-9 right now overall, they're 2-5 in the conference. They are a little bit better, I think, than what their record is.
Well, Penn State's not the sort of team that can take anybody for granted, right? Like Penn State has to play their best in every game, and they may be able to blow some teams out, but it's not like Nebraska is so far below the talent level of Penn State that you would say Penn State can just roll the ball out there. And that's kind of the last thing I want to ask you. And this is the same thing I ask on every time I talk about Penn State basketball, going back to when I was on Sports Talk with Steve Jones, and I would ask Steve this question. And how do you get the chicken and the egg situation to stop? Because Penn State has the opportunity here. This is a good basketball team. This is a good basketball team with a lot of good pieces. They're fun to watch. Jalen Pickett is awesome. But you've got a window, it feels like, to get people's attention. And this game feels like a very big part of that window. The Palestra game didn't go their way in the second half. That was kind of fell flat. Being in Philly, not finishing in a way that the game was close. Saturday home game. You can't fall back into the same Penn State basketball isms where, okay, well, even if you beat Nebraska, it's a close game and you're like, oh, wow, that team was, the average basketball fan can say that Nebraska sucks, right? Or they can say that they're bad based on their record, and you play close. Like, how do you break this cycle of interest level in the program so that you're not begging people to come to the BJC? And when there is the opportunity, maybe it isn't a Saturday game, people are going to make the effort. Because, like, you know, I accidentally said football there, but, like, people make the effort to get to football games whenever they are. So how do you make people want to get to a basketball game where Penn State is playing?
Win. Win the game.
Yeah.
That's it. Look, I'm going to share two things. One is, and you know, this doesn't matter maybe to anybody, but the metrics at our website during the Wisconsin game were the highest interaction. Like, it was the leading page on our site during that game. Like, that is not typical. That is not typical. So people
are interested in this team, right? So I guess that's my point. It's people are interested in this team. You got to hammer. Like, you got to hammer this if you're Mike Shrewsbury. And I just feel like the opportunity is here. This is what I'm outlining. The opportunity is here. And he feels like the guy that's going to be able to do it. And can he do it? Can we have a different story at the end of this season? I would love, that was the one thing I was frustrated with, I think, last night, is I've seen that story before. You know, and obviously everyone's seen that story before. But like, we all want to see something new, even if you don't root for the program. I want to see something I've never seen before. I want to see something different. And it feels like this year, this team has the opportunity to be something different. But as you said, this is an inflection point where it has to be different.
It can't be a – look, every game is its own story. Every game, every time out there, every practice, what have you. Like, it's not – the book isn't written. And so I think that there's a danger in looking ahead and saying, oh, well, this game's this. Because we've played that game before as well. Games that have been – right? I mean, even after Penn State lost to Michigan State, it was an automatic assumed loss at Illinois.
Yep.
Penn State blew their doors off, right? Like, Penn State played a great game at Illinois and won that game. So I just think that there's a danger in allowing, whether it's the team itself or the fan base, whatever, of getting too far ahead of yourself. This season, there are 13 games left. Play them out. See what happens. Yeah. But I don't think it really matters on Saturday what it looks like. I think they have to win. You have to hold serve. Like, you because the interest will be there if a couple of things. The interest will be there if Penn State is ranked or sniffing a ranking, right? Yep. Penn State fans love winners. If you're if you're relevant nationally, it doesn't matter what it is. Penn State loves lacrosse when lacrosse is in the Final Four. You know, Penn State loves all of these different things, women's volleyball, what have you. Penn State fans love it when their team is winning, and they'll take an interest in that sport, even if they're not
diehard fans.
Totally.
Yeah.
So there's that element of it. And if Penn State wins games and finds it, if Penn State can stay around 500 in the Big Ten throughout the Big Ten season, they're going to be in good shape.
Yeah.
People will pay attention to that. But I just think that this is a moment where figuring out how to get over it, like, just let it go, the last one, and refocus, re-energize, rest up, what have you. Do all of those reset things to go into Nebraska on Saturday and come out of there with a win. Because on the backside of it, there's a schedule that is – I'm not going to say that it's not – daunting. It is. Like, at Rutgers is a tough place to play. It's really hard to win there. But Michigan at home, you could win that game, right? Like, just trade. Do the trade.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just win your home games, try to steal one on the road, and then see where things fall out.
And to that point of what the ultimate thing is that's going to get people interested is make the tournament. And that's where the ultimate goal for this season is, and that's where all of that I said points to, right? Is like, it's not about Nebraska, it's not about this game, it's not about the high-minded narratives of and philosophical comfort. Just make the tournament, and that's the end all be all. That's the end all of this show, though. That's at least what I've got. Nate, do you have anything else before we get going?
That's it. 2:15 BTN, BJC on Saturday. Penn State, Nebraska. We'll see what happens.
As always, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're airing it in the middle of the day live on Wednesday. Please like the video. If you're checking us out on the podcast version, I know most people that follow the show are on the podcast version. Please give us a 5-star review of the show. We already got one of those, and I want to give a shout out to Greg, who gave us a 5-star review. Loves Nate, loves the coverage, and we appreciate that. If you would, especially Apple Podcasts, I know that's a big thing. All the other platitudes that you get at the end of a show, like the video, subscribe, download, sign up to our newsletter, sign up to our website, sign up to our fax machine, and our smoke signals. I'll be sending out large smoke signals and a little bit of Morse code later tonight. So, Nate, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you later.